Page 17. The Blind Californian celebrates the Department of Rehabilitation's 50th birthday. By Judy Wilkinson. At our fall conference convention, Joe Xavier, Deputy Director, Specialized Services Division, reminded us that in 2013, the Department of Rehabilitation in its current form would celebrate its 50th birthday. Rather than reciting chapter and verse about that event, we take a more personal, hopefully more meaningful approach by presenting the following interview with the man many of you know well. Longtime visually impaired rehab counselor and supervisor, Gil Johnson joined the department just 1 year after it became the California State Department of Rehabilitation. I was particularly pleased to conduct this interview since, as my counselor, I had been teaching for several years, Gil respected the case I made, reopened my file, and provided me with a much-needed opticon, a then-costly print reading device, and training. Gil Johnson has worked as a rehabilitation counselor, supervisor, manager, and director in public and private rehabilitation agencies for 44 years before he retired in 2008. He retired from the American Foundation for the Blind, where he served as senior advisor on critical issues and director of AFB's National Employment Center. Page 18. Prior to that, he directed the Federal State Rehabilitation Program for persons who are blind or visually impaired in Illinois. Following his time at the California Department of Rehabilitation, he managed rehabilitation and recreation programs at the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind. He designed and led intensive training programs targeted toward rehabilitation professionals. He has written several published articles, given many presentations at professional and consumer meetings, and has received several awards, including an award for employment articles for the BC. He and his wife, Becky, who have been married for 50 years, and his guide dog, Nero, live in San Leandro and are guardian grandparents for three of their grandsons. Question: why rehab 50th? Rehab has been around since the 1920s, but in 1963, the California legislature designated rehabilitation as its own department. Question: how and when did you get involved with the department? Page 19. I got my master's degree in counseling and guidance from San Francisco State and sent out about 200 resumes and had several interviews, but nothing came together. My rehab counselor at that time told me about a test for rehab counselor trainee. I did well on the test and the interview and got the job in San Francisco in 1964. They promoted me before the one-year period was up. I moved to the Oakland office in 1966. Question: were there very many blind counselors at that time? There were a few of us, 8 or 10. Question: so how was it? What were the challenges? I think this was a high point in rehabilitation. Mary Switzer was commissioner of the then Vocational Rehabilitation Agency. There was such an emphasis on specialized training programs. She made several national training programs available specifically for blind folks in computer programming, as a machinist, language translator. All these things were just coming online when I started working. It was a really exciting time. Maybe because the department was so new, the staff was just some of the best that I've ever worked with. Very bright, very motivated, very client-focused, and the paperwork was very minimal. I could open a case, put a person in a plan, and close them rehabilitated with 5 pieces of paper. Usually it took a little more than that, but that's how easy it could have been. Page 20. I always felt very supported. I had a clerk who did any reading for me. I would dictate notes which went to the steno pool. It's not that way now. Question: so you had more time to actually deal with the clients? Oh, absolutely. My caseload was 90 to 100, all visually impaired. That was a very workable load. At that time, pretty much all the blind counselors were sent to a federally funded program at the University of Southern Illinois at Carbondale for 6 weeks of training in job placement. I credit that with my understanding of employment and working with employers. Question. I remember at that time a person could pretty much declare a job goal, say law school or a PhD, and the department would approve it. Yes, of course you had to make a case for it, but it was the understanding that you weren't working just to get somebody into a job. You were looking toward helping people get into a lifelong career. If a higher degree was indicated and they wanted it, and the testing showed they were capable, and whatever you had to do to determine it, you could make a good case. Question, what about where people could go to college? Page 21. The first preference because of expense was state college or university, but if there was a specialized training or program that met their needs and was accredited, you could make a case, and I did in a number of instances. I had a couple of people go to a rehab teaching program at the University of Michigan, and every now and again I run across a former client who went through that program, and that's pretty exciting. I sent several people to a private training school in Vancouver, Washington, the Piano Hospital, to learn how to be piano technicians, an excellent 2-year program. If we needed to, we could send people for evaluation and training at a center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Their big stake in things was training representatives for Social Security and the IRS. Their standards were very high, but if someone got through the program, they were virtually guaranteed a job. Not necessarily where you wanted to go, but they tried their best. So you had to make a case, but the results were so good from those kinds of programs that I never found it very hard to justify it. Question, how many cases did you generally close? An average of 20 per year, that was my goal. Getting you to where you're ready to go to work and got behind them once you felt they really had hold of things, then it wasn't that hard. Page 22. The other thing that I did, and I enjoy doing it and still do, is going out and meeting and talking with employers to develop jobs, but also so I could come back and talk to my clients. This is what you'll be expected to do on the job. This is what the employer will pay you to do. Here's how you need to prepare yourself. And I could do that because I knew what the expectations were. Question, lots of counselors never do that. How did you find employers? I always look for leads. When I left an employer, I'd ask if they could suggest anybody else I could talk to. Then I could tell Joe that this other guy sent me, and that opened a lot of doors. There were a lot of barriers, too. It wasn't all wine and roses. Long before the ADA, long before public acceptance of blindness and disability, I remember one employer, I had finally gotten an appointment, who said, "I didn't sleep a wink last night because I was so worried about your coming. I didn't know what to expect." He wound up hiring one of my clients. Others said right out, "No, we don't hire people with disabilities." And they could do that back then. Question. Did the department have to supply all a client's equipment, or did the employer ever do that? Page 23. It was some and some. Once I was going somewhere with the vice president of the Bank of America and was trying to get a job for a client in computer programming. I took him to observe a successfully employed blind person in the field, and on the way back, I was giving him my pitch that we could help with equipment, and he hesitated and then said, "You know, the Bank of America doesn't need the state to buy its employees' equipment." And I thought to myself, shut up. At that time, there were a couple of national programs in computer programming, and then Systems Development in Santa Monica started a training program which the state funded. When a client successfully finished that training, they had a job. The other exciting thing about my job was I had all the high school students in Alameda County, including those from the California School for the Blind, in my caseload. That gave me the opportunity to bring them on early. I helped CSB build what is now called their transition program. Before that, the school had Bob Campbell, who supervised the non-client reading program, and George Fogarty, who followed up with CSB graduates. Someone in Sacramento figured out we could get federal matching, so his position came into the department, and I was George's supervisor until he retired. Page 24, question. You went on to become one of the first blind supervisors in the department. What was that like? There was some tension between the counselors with visually impaired caseloads who wanted promotion to supervisor and others who thought, well, you may be good at working with blind folks, but what do you know about other disabilities, let alone supervising? I took the exam a couple of times, but was never picked until in 1972 or 73. Finally, John Parks, district supervisor in the Oakland office, said, enough of this nonsense, and hired me. Question, were you the first blind supervisor? I'm not sure. John Millen in Southern California was another early one. Jim Riley went another direction in planning and then the BEP. The transition worked well because I was hired in an area I knew so well with counselors whose caseloads I knew. The spinal cord injury specialists, Ed Roberts and company, counselors who worked in poor areas in Richmond and Oakland, the whole range. Question, when did all the red tape and paperwork start to come in? The Rehab Act was reauthorized in 1973, and I feel to this day that the program got gutted. Page 25. We used to proudly say that we were vocational counselors. Vocational got dropped off, and much more extensive reporting was instituted. The common joke was, well, why don't we capture this piece of information, too, because it doesn't take much and might be useful sometime. And the forums grew and grew. Perhaps not as I understand it to the point it is now. We had a week of training on the new forums in around 1975. Question, what other challenges did you face as supervisor? We had great support staff, but the challenge was keeping up with other information generally available in the field. This is long before Kurzweil or computers with speech. I used volunteer readers to read non-case material. When Ed Roberts became director, he wanted to upgrade the supervisor position. We all had to take the new test, 120 for 100 positions. I didn't make it. I became a senior counselor with a caseload again. I didn't actively look for something, but something found me, and I went to work for the San Francisco Lighthouse. I've been fortunate that every job change I've had has come looking for me. Question, after reading this, folks are going to realize the department you knew is not the one we know today. What would you say are the biggest differences? Page 26. Perhaps it's a losing battle, but I think it's a disservice for rehabilitation counselors working with people who want jobs to say, I don't talk to employers. I will never be content with that. There are a few that do, in spite of everything. I haven't seen statistics lately, but those that actively talked with employers, their numbers were up. I think it's a real disservice for a counselor not to be able to talk in a first-hand, meaningful way about expectations of work. If you've just come out of college into this civil service job and not worked anywhere else, you don't know what the world of work is. Before the Division for the Blind was created, the numbers were abysmal. Lots and lots of counselors and lots of money, and very little to show for it in terms of people going to work. Things are getting better. I talk with Joe Xavier now and again, and he's very much on this same track of getting more people to work and focusing on employment. You have to have the other basic skills, travel, braille, or computing, maintain a home, but if you stop there, you're selling yourself short. The world is a heck of a lot more complicated and sophisticated for everyone. Question, the department has to make tough financial decisions. Do you have thoughts on how it is deploying its dollars? It's a complex of things. Page 27, when Fred Schroeder was RSA commissioner, he re-emphasized what most of us have believed all along. You want to prepare people for a career, not just a job, and that is totally appropriate under the Rehab Act. Getting the appropriate services and training was not only possible but encouraged. What's complicated that is two things. I don't think a lot of counselors believe it, and they may not push the envelope hard enough. On the other hand, staff finds it easier to say you shouldn't shoot for a master's or a law degree or even a BA degree. It's an easy way out. You'll never hear anyone say that. You'll never find it in case notes. Money is tight, but it may be an excuse. If you plan enough in advance, encumber funds, and then release them if necessary. I don't think enough of that is happening. A lot of money is being spent on assessments and an evaluation. In my day, we didn't spend near as much on this. But equipment also takes up a lot of funds. We didn't spend as much in my day on that either. Today, you can spend $5,000 to $6,000 without even thinking about it. Question, what do you see in the future for the department? This new trend toward buying in bulk and using known vendors and trainers is more economical, also eliminating hurdles of multiple bids. But I go back to my original premise, focusing counselor attention on employment outcomes. Page 28, there are more employment opportunities for blind people these days than ever before, even in today's economy. But you have to know where to look. You have to be aware of trends in the labor market, so you aren't sending people into fields that may have been pretty good but aren't anymore. Question, what about supporting career change? If there's a darn good reason why the career you're in is dead-ended and you're basically underemployed and you can make that case to your counselor and not be afraid to appeal if you're turned down, the Rehab Act is still probably one of the better pieces of legislation that ever existed in terms of what it allows the counselor to approve. The counselor has a lot of latitude in what the law allows. Question, final thoughts? With the advances in technology, the doors that have opened in the last 20 years, with leadership under Joe Xavier, I'm hoping things will get better. And with the president encouraging Congress and the country to expand employment at all levels, this could be a really good time. But those things need to come together. I'm an optimist.